Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. This is our man Ian is on the board here. Everything working so far. We just started, but everything's working so far, right, Ian? Phones, everything?
Yeah, everything's working for now. Don't jinx it.
S&P futures up 18. I'm sorry, down 18. NASDAQ futures down 53. We're talking about people that maybe don't do nothing. Are we talking about people who are retired up in Michigan? Hey, Brennan, how are you? Jeez.
I was waiting for that.
I'm just saying, you know.
I even withheld the starchy comment about paying your phone bill. And here's what I get. I get blasted from the chief.
Funny you should mention the phone bill and the the phone situation. For those that have been, unfortunately, forced to listen about the world we now live in, like in actually trying to get phones working from, like, the phone company, PTI Securities, obviously, is where we are, and we've had the same system for like forever, internet and phones and everything, and it has done nothing but work for 20 years, right? Not a problem. Well, of course, now the company gets sold to somebody, and everybody we talk to is in India. And I don't even think they knew they had us anymore, right? So of course, AT&T now wires the building, and they're all over us. You know, for you guys need to come with us, blah 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 blah. Okay, that's fine. So we do, and it turns out that everything is, actually much better in terms of all our connectivity. And since I have all the million new stocks and stuff, Brendan, not new stocks, but that I'm doing stuff for a lot of people on my, let's just say, my universe of positions I watch and things, and people that are here with systems and so forth has expanded pretty dramatically. So we end up with this latest and greatest system that actually works much faster and tremendously. Okay, so it was a good move, except for the fact they just can't seem to get the phone lines proper, right, when it comes to Stocks and Jacks. The four lines we have for Stocks and Jacks remain a mystery to the phone company. We can't quite figure out, they can't seem to get those working. It's a programming issue, it's something. What do you mean it's a freaking phone line? But in the midst of all this, one thing I did 11 years ago when we started Stocks and Jacks, I said, hey, look, we're going to send the show out, and we don't want it anywhere near PTI. We don't want anybody hacking into the securities firm or anything like that, despite everybody's assurances. I said, look, there's only one way that I know that the thing is nobody's ever going to hack anywhere, is I'm going to have a line that walks across the room and only goes to the Stocks and Jacks computer and doesn't go anywhere else, right? I'm just a Luddite from the South Side. What can I say, Brendan? So we have this, you know, copper line that goes to the Stocks and Jacks computer that in 11 years has never bleeped up ever, right? It's been the one thing that you could absolutely count on. I pay the bill every month. I'm sure I'm paying a little too much for it, but I don't care, you know. So I now have had five people call me regarding, you know, we got to change that out to a fiber optic line. Why? Well, but geez, you know, fiber optic's so much better. It works fine. Yeah, but, you know, it's fiber optics faster. It's a radio show. I don't need it faster. I just need it to work. So finally, the guy calls me at home last night on my cell phone. I said, you know, why don't you spend your time getting the phone lines for Stocks and Jacks to work? Why? What's wrong with those? Well, they don't work all the time. Really? How can that be? And the guy says, Well, you really, how come you don't want us to? I said, first of all, I have agreed to change the line twice now. You guys came out once and spent all day there putting a Wi-Fi. The last thing you want for a radio show or a brokerage firm is a Wi-Fi, because people can hack into the Wi-Fi. Does he mean you don't have Wi-Fi? No, a brokerage firm does not want Wi-Fi. What's the matter with you? I mean, you don't. You want everything hardwired, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, this is. I don't think I'm being an idiot here. So, guys, well, let's get back to this line that you use for stocks and jacks. I said, it's the only thing in the place that has worked for 11 years, and you have five people wanting to change it, and the same five people can't fix the three phone lines. Well, yeah, I guess that's true. I said, well, what do I miss? Brendan, am I that much of a moron or what? I mean, what is wrong with this world that I don't seem to fit in anymore?
You're talking too plain English. You're talking too much Southside, and you're making a lot of sense. But when you make sense like that, the message doesn't get through. Don't get me started on my issues with AT&T, what we had over here. And even now, our place over here in Michigan has been wired with fiber optics. And we're still having problems right now because the service, instead of 100 Mbps per second, or per minute, is down to 1.5 sometimes because something is going wrong with their system.
Why do...
You know, these are communications companies. You think that they would learn how to communicate.
But why are they given this kind of monopoly? And no matter how bad they bleep up, nothing seems to happen. They just keep raising prices.
I wish I knew the answer to that, Chief.
I mean, what are we, I don't know if you listened, we had a chance to listen yesterday, because we're zeroing in on, well, what I try and do, Brendan, as you know, sometimes I'm failing miserably, but sometimes hanging in there. I'm thinking a lot of the political unrest now, other than the, you know, people just, So used to arguing with people on the other side that they just don't even like the people on the other side, and it's probably 60% of the issue now, but I don't know what you do about that. But bottom line, there are some issues that appear to be, you know, long-term ongoing that have really caused, in one man's opinion, economic, shall we say, not inaccuracies, but just things that aren't right, you know. Mm-hmm. We see the firms that didn't pay taxes because they were overseas for 20 years, having an unconscionable chunk of the economy right now in anybody's imagination. We're seeing the student loan issues, people being charged too much for school and too much for interest over a period of 30 years to the point where look what it's done to the society. You know, we look at credit. I mean, and you see different people coming out with, quote, solutions to this. That they aren't very well thought out, but they never seem to. Can't anybody, no matter who they are, Brent, is this? I know you and I are old school, but can't anybody? And I had the same basically bitch about the Coca-Cola guy bitching about the voting thing in Georgia. Can't anybody now get a piece of paper and put a pen in it and actually write something down that makes sense? Does everything have to be, shall we say, the most non-rigorous piece of crap that it just somebody's opinion and everybody jumps all over? Can't anybody write anything that would actually be a B paper anywhere?
Well, you know, I think another issue that this just as well is nobody can admit a mistake. Nobody can say, here's your working assumptions, here's where we thought it was going to go. It's obvious that it hasn't worked out that way. So let's recalibrate. Let's take this in a slightly different direction because we know from putting the plan in place that this works, that doesn't. So let's fix that and move to this so that we can try to make it work better. But once you do that, in the political realm, everybody jumps all over you as being a failure or being weak for not sticking to your guns. Which, bad pun right now. I didn't mean it as to sound like that, but they stick to their position because they don't want to give away anything to the other side, because the other side won't say, yeah, so let's fix what's broken and move on.
Well, we don't anticipate, I mean, whatever you do, I mean, is, you know, if you put a hose on somebody's roof and check out the shingles, the water has to go somewhere. You better hope there's a drain. I mean, the time to think about where the water is going to go that you're using to test the roof is not a day later. It's kind of before you do the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there should be some.
It's not even during the test.
Yeah, it's you know, what are we doing here? And I don't see really any of that on any of this stuff. I don't see anybody any sort of anticipation. Well, we're going to do this, but we can't just. It's not going to end there. What is this going to do for us 2 years, 5 years down the road? And then we seem shocked that it's there. I mean, I was talking the other day about the tulip issue. And I think we have some sneaky listeners, Brennan, because all of a sudden I got this article, and all these guys did was go through the tulip issue in Amsterdam, and it was like we did the show was verbatim on what they wrote. But which is fine. I mean, I don't own the history of the tulip issue, obviously. But when you look at it and you say, how did this thing go from something that people just started to do to being this incredible boom and incredible bust in a sense in 2 or 3 years? And sure enough, after like 1 year, they found a way to get tulips on the exchanges. That's what we're trying to do with Bitcoin, right? And after like a year and a half, we found a way for people to borrow money to buy the tulips. Duh, which we're trying to do now with these some of this stuff. Now, as soon as you can do margin, sure enough, it was like 4 months later, 6 months later, the whole thing crashed. Now, armed with history, probably 10 times when stuff like this has happened, why do we keep going down the same road? Do we just not read? We can't read? We think we're different? What are we doing here? I mean,
well, you just hit on the point that if it's my idea, I'm smarter than everybody else, so this time it'll work because it'll be different because it's me proposing it. That's the attitude. And, you know, whoever the me is in this is coming up with some kind of power or idea that's going to work. And sometimes these things work incredibly. I mean, look at what's going on with the SPACs right now, where they're kind of falling apart. But they're really highly funded for a short period of time, and now they're not.
Well, but there are, for something like that, you know, I think how people, you know, bring stuff to market and things, to a certain extent, as long as people are getting the right information, which I question necessarily if they are, I mean, you sort of have to let the economy, I'm kind of a laissez-faire guy in a lot of regards to that, if people are getting the right information, which is a big, but it seems like every time we try and go around, there's only, and you, I bet you can name these more than me, because I should know these and I don't, there's only like, what, 4 or 5 things left from the New Deal?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking you can probably name them. I can name a few. Social Security being one of them, right?
Social Security is one.
The agricultural insurance stuff is one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think your SEC stuff, the 33 and 34 Act, where when something becomes public, you have to have, you know, the prospectus.
Disclosure.
You got to have all the registrations. You got to have all that stuff. Well, no, we're not doing that anymore either, are we?
Well, it's limited. It's changed.
No, like I just said, we're not doing that anymore. We don't need necessarily no stinking disclosure. We're giving people money just on the hint that they're going to go buy something, right? That's not exactly disclosure on what they bought, right?
Right. Well, I mean, one of the big things that's been taken away is Glass-Steagall, and I think that's going to a lot of the problems right now.
Yeah, except I will always push back on that because that's a. By the time you got rid of Glass-Steagall, it was useless because it had been.
But the point is, it was useless because it had been changed so much. But
right.
I think that the idea behind Glass-Steagall was a good one and was warranted.
Yes,
and remains warranted today.
But it's part and parcel of kind of what we do, right? And it's. For instance, when we had payment for order flow in the business when I first started, you couldn't take the other side of somebody else's trade, and you know, most of the time, I mean, there was always big firms found a way to do it, of course, but the investment banking firms, how they did it, I don't know how they got around that rule, but they did. But basically, and a CBOE, you couldn't be a trade for your own account and be a broker in the same stock in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you essentially couldn't cross orders. Say, well, that's a good one. I'll charge Brendan to do it. By the way, it's such a dumb idea, Brendan's. I'll take the other side. you couldn't do that, and you can't do that in basically any walk of life. You know, Audrey can't tell you, oh God, you really should buy this house for $400,000, and you say, well, who's the seller? And she goes, me. You know, I mean, anybody. But yet now we have, that's fine. So what the firms did in that regard, and I don't remember who they were, but it was the ones everybody knows. They decided they didn't want to be in the business of where they had to tell people they took the other sides of the orders. So what they did is like four or five of them got together, created a preferencing firm, and then split the profits 20%. Well, when you have a government that is that stupid to allow that to happen, then that's what happened to Glass-Steagall. So, I mean, it was the thing that buried Glass-Steagall was the, you're probably the only person who knows this, what was it, the public utility, not public utility, it was the Bank Holding Company Act?
Yep.
For what we're talking about here is, like Smith Barney couldn't be an investment bank and a which they were, and a commercial bank at the same time, right?
Yeah.
But the Citigroup could own Citigroup Holding, could own Citibank, and could own Smith Barney at the same time.
And Morgan Stanley.
Well, that was long before Morgan Stanley. Right? It was long
All
before.
Right.
Citigroup doesn't own Morgan Stanley.
It's BMA owns that.
No, Morgan Stanley is independent. Somebody owns Merrill Lynch, or somebody owns a...
Merrill Lynch, that's what I'm thinking of. Never mind.
Yeah. No, Citigroup bought Smith Barney, I believe, way back in the day. Mm-hmm. But they could never... But Citibank could never have bought Smith Barney.
Right.
But Citigroup could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this goes through any walk of business. I mean, back when Pullman was taken over, essentially, to raid the pension fund, you couldn't... If you were oversubscribed in your pension fund, which everybody was back in those days, because people were getting 12% in the bank, right, Brendan? So you wonder years later, how exactly could the pension fund at United and these places be broke when they were so far ahead of the game? I mean, Pullman was ahead of the game. The deal was, if it was your fund, you couldn't take the money out if you were overfunded. You had to leave it.
That's right.
But if you bought the place, you could then reload, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and redistribute the assets.
I think you had to buy people into it. There was some thing you had to do, but it was, you probably know better than me. But I mean,
I'm oversimplifying, but yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to say that's why United Airlines became UAL Inc., right?
Mm-hmm.
Was to raid the pension funds.
Yeah.
So, if you're ignorant enough as a regulator or as a government to allow that to happen, so let me get this straight. United Airlines can't take the money back out of the pension fund. No, but what if we put together UAL Inc. and we buy United Airlines? Oh, then it's fine. I mean, are we that stupid as a country? We must be.
Well, it doesn't mean that you're that stupid as a country. It means the lawyers who put this together are ingenious. The lawyers and the accountants.
But is it really a question? You know, we have some issues with some of the contributors to the show, because Carl is a guy who's he's very bright, but he's at a point where he believes, and he's not calling for any kind of violence or anything like that. He never would. But he's reaching the point, Brendan, that people are just, some people, with a growing number of people every day, are just over it. That you can't expect these people to do the right thing when their basically ass pocket is getting stuffed, and they're convinced that somewhere in the next 25 years we're going to have a real serious revolution here, because these people just don't get it. They're just stealing. They don't care. And they don't care what happens to the people along the way. They're just stepping over them or stepping on them. And somehow or another, we've lost the ability as a country to deal with it through the ballot box. And I absolutely hope and pray, honestly, I'm not a big prayer, that that's wrong. But I don't know that I don't think it's 10 or 20% right now and growing. I'm
afraid of that, too. But, you know, I'm going to switch gears a little bit because there was a news article that we haven't mentioned yet, talked about yet, that I thought was right up your alley. And the Canadian National Railway is planning a takeover for Kansas City Southern.
Okay, now you missed the first piece of that.
For another bidding war and another reduction in the number of trains. It's
somewhat of a surprise because there's Canadian National, what's the other one? There's two Canadian railroads left. And somebody
Canadian bid, Northern?
Whatever, it used to be. But anyway, the first one bid $275 for Kansas City Southern, 6 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And now the other one is bid $320.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who don't know much, about no stinking railroads, you're essentially going west. You've got the Burlington Northern, Santa Fe. There's only five routes west, okay? So the Burlington Northern, which was a combination of Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, Great Northern, Northern Pacific, and somebody else.
Okay.
Then they bought the Santa Fe later. All right, so then the Union Pacific became the Union Pacific Southern Pacific. So there's two roads that own everything going west, and everything going east is either the Chessy Southern, and the other one is the Norfolk Southern, right? Or Norfolk and Western. So there's only two going east and two. Then in the middle, you have the IC, which was bought by the Canadian National a while ago, right? So the Canadian mm-hmm. National already has a big chunk in the middle. And the only one who was, I'm going to say, quasi-independent in the middle of the country is the Kansas City Southern. I think the Canadian National bought the Wisconsin Central, too, right?
I don't know.
But the only one who's kind of left, and it's kind of the little engine that could, is the Kansas City Southern. And mm-hmm. they manage the middle of the country, and they go down to Mexico, and they have a lot of really, really good assets. And now, of course, when you look at some of these companies that are worth $100, $200 billion that don't have squat, and you look at a railroad and say, wait a minute, what would be the cost to recreate this thing? And it would be how many trillion dollars, Brendan? You know,
mm-hmm.
these numbers, I mean, $320 billion for locomotives, track, property, seems like a steal, doesn't it? compared to some company that just existed yesterday that's worth $200 billion or something. So now there's a bidding war for this thing. But now that would leave, depending on who gets it, the IC, which is the middle of the country, and the Kansas City Southern, that becomes somewhat of a monopoly in the middle of the country, right?
Right.
Now, what you see in Chicago is when you see less and less trains in the city, it's because the Canadian National now runs that track around the city and does a lot of the switching outside Chicago now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now, the question is, the Kansas City Southern makes money all the time. There's no reason for us to drop another railroad. There's no reason for them to be bought by anybody. I mean, if you and I want to buy them, I think it's fine. But another mm-hmm. railroad, but when you start getting down to 6-7 railroads on a continent, for God's sake, you're getting sort of low, right?
You're getting very low. And isn't that getting close to the definition of a monopolistic?
I'm saying it's way over the top. I mean, did the Burlington Northern that runs east to west through Minnesota and Northern, did they really have to buy the Santa Fe? I mean, did the Union Pacific really have to buy the Southern Pacific? I mean, what kind of serious competition do you think that the Union Pacific and the Burlington Northern really do to each other? It's a duopoly, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
But now why yep. can't we just say no? No, you just can't. Do we really need a Canadian railroad buying the two railroads in the middle of the country? The Illinois Central.
For the same reason, Chief, that AT&T is in the position it is. It's all about efficiency. They think about all of the good things that a monopolistic entity like that could bring in the terms of efficiency and cost savings because of consolidation.
Well, there's no doubt, Kevin.
That, are you?
There's no doubt, Brendan, that it's going to be good for you and me. They're helping
me out. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? You know, it's interesting that some of the stuff that my long-departed professor, Milton Friedman, he's the guy who used to expound on it. He reminded me of me a little bit in the sense he just, he could never stay on topic, which was good because the topic he was teaching us was the theory of price. Could anything be more boring? I'll try and find the manuscript someday. I mean, every graph had, you know, 50 curved lines on it and stuff, and you're looking at this stuff going, please talk about politics or do something. I mean, we don't need to learn this crap, but evidently we did. But he actually thought that in some ways a monopolist was probably more efficient than a duopoly or a cartel. Because some of it was because he thought if he ever had like a couple of months with nothing to do, he was going to dig through the math on that, and he never did. But by and large, I mean, does this really have to happen to the Canadian? I mean, you could make the case, Brennan, that this is America. You get to do everything. I mean, you get to buy places, you get to sell places. I mean, that's what we are. Where it comes down to is you and I, I don't think you do, we should be able to buy hot dog stands, hamburger stands, gas stations, whatever we want. Because we don't have any axe to grind. We don't have any market power. But if you're sitting in, you know, a small town Michigan like you are, and there's two hamburger stands, and one buys the other, now you got a problem, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing should be available for anybody to buy except the other hamburger stand. Because the only reason why he's doing it is to raise the prices. I mean, who's kidding who?
Well, that's like the old story that you always want a town that's able to support two lawyers or two barbers, but especially two lawyers, because if you only have one lawyer, he's going to starve because there's nobody to go against. But you want to have two lawyers in town so that one can see the clients of the other.
Now, do you let them have lunch together?
Sure.
So they can compare
notes. Lawyers are ethical, so they can separate their feelings over lunch.
How could anybody be? How could you have a non-ethical lawyer? After all, they deal with the law. <don't you? laughs> Brennan, thank you very much, buddy. We got a dash. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 53. That would be 2 days in a row down. I don't know if we can handle that. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatory anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's my man Ian, and aboard. S&P futures down 16. We're coming back a little bit. And NASDAQ futures down 45. So we were down 21 or 22 at one point. We got the Dow futures down 140. We've got a bunch of earnings we'll talk about in a second. As a way to review yesterday, Dow was down 123, S&P down 22, NASDAQ down 137. So we were down pretty heavy to NASDAQ. That was a full point. For Europe, we got the DAX down 137, it's 0.9%. FTSE down 85, 1.3%. We got the CAC down 94, 1.5. So pretty heavy losses over there. Not huge heavy, but it's over 1% enough. Nikkei down 584, that's 2%. Shanghai down 4, call that flat. Hang Seng up a little bit, 29.1%. So those guys have been going different directions all daily now for a while. Bonds, 1.59, that's unchanged. The Bund, minus 0.24. So that's, again, moving more toward positive. They were down to minus 0.3-somethings there for, like, forever. Japan minus a positive 0.09. Oiled up 11 cents, 63.49. Brent up 19 cents, 67.24. So those things are both high. Oil was $57 maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, so it's at about a 10% run-up. Natural gas down 2 cents, 272. Arbob unchanged at 204. We've got gold up 450, 1775, which has eased a little bit from their multi-week high, but still a long way from the 1670 it was maybe 10 days ago. Silver up 14 cents, 25.98. Copper up a penny, 425. And our favorite crypto, Bitcoin up 101 to 55,963. And I think they traded 63 last weekend, so it's down somewhat from there, but seems to have found a home. 55 seems to be spot where the thing keeps bouncing. I don't know if that's, I'm not a technical guy, but it seems like when it gets there, it kind of reloads a little bit, at least it has. Ian, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right. For traffic, Chicago traffic, we got an accident on I-94 West. Things are backed up there, and you should know there's a Cubs game at 6:40 today, so keep a lookout for that if you're driving to Chicago.
Even though nobody can go there, only 8,000 people.
Only 8,000 people. And for the weather, we're going to have snow today in Chicago. It's a really cold one, high of 40, and it's going to be cloudy today. In Phoenix, it's, of course, 93 with no clouds, sunny all day. For our sports, we have White Sox lost to the Red Sox, 4-11. Sounds like a pretty exciting game. The Cubs were off, and the Blackhawks lost to the Predators, 2-5. And, Tom, I got a Joel on for you.
We hear the Bullies played well. They won in Boston. You forgot all about the Bullies.
What are the Bullies?
The Chicago Bulls.
Oh, the Chicago Bulls. Oh, they played in Boston.
Yeah, they won.
The Bulls.
The Bulls. Joel, the how are you, buddy? We have, it's interesting how sports, the world of sports, what was the line? The spectacle, human competition, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat? Wasn't that Wide World of Sports?
You talk a Wide World of Sports.
Yeah.
Remember that guy, what they used to show, that guy was bobsledding?
No, he was ski jumping.
No, he wasn't ski jump. Was it ski jumping?
Yeah, the guy fell off the thing and landed in a heap. He actually wasn't hurt very.
He wasn't hurt
very badly. That's why they kept using it. The guy somehow didn't break his leg or anything.
What do you think about sports, Chief? What do you think about the? Would you like to own a sports franchise right now?
As usual, Joel, every question you give me is a multifaceted question. I'm going to say that...
Is it really?
I'm going to say, would you want one just for the money that you have to pay today and think it's a good buy?
I knew you were going to say that.
The answer is probably no. But I also know that nobody's ever lost money on one in recent memory. And it is the closest thing to American royalty that we have. It's a group that you can't just buy a team and be in. They have to vote you in. It is the most absurd thing. Talk about a lack of competition. You and I just can't have a huge day trading and buy the White Sox. If the other guys don't like us, we can't buy them. That's not America that you and I know. It is like the House of Lords. You think Mark Cuban actually gave a rat's behind about being an owner of the Dallas Mavericks? It was getting in that club. It meant he made it. He wasn't just some schlump.
I just look at these stadiums, and I'm not. You mentioned 8,000 game, 8,000 at the Cubs game and stuff. Who knows what's in store for Michigan football? If you just think about, okay, the ticket revenue. I know that, and my dad's been saying this for years. Rest in peace. That the TV is going to ruin sports, and TV is going to ruin horse racing. Who needs fans at a horse race? He told me this back in the 70s, right? If you could just bet from a phone or a computer. But I just look at these stadiums, and I know the ticket revenue is inconsequential, but what about the hotels?
No, it's not.
What about the restaurants? What about the vendors? I just look at that, and, we're coming out of this thing, hopefully, slowly but surely, but...
I don't think the enthusiasm
for Michigan football, right?
I don't think the ticket revenue is inconsequential, Joe. I think that's what we've been led to believe, and it's BS. I don't think it's inconsequential at all. When you're talking about Michigan football, 110,000 people, $100 a throw, anybody who thinks that's inconsequential has got way too much money.
I agree. And then I just don't know how they're going to do it this year. I paid for my tickets last year. I left, they said, hey, you want your money back or you want to donate it? I said, hey, I'll keep the money in. I'm going to renew the tickets. But I know I'm not, inconceivable that I'm going to get tickets to all the games. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But two down opens in a row, Chief. What's going on here with this market?
You weren't on last week. You were taking a hiatus, which you well deserved. I have a feeling that this Bitcoin's got big enough to cause trouble to the market if it goes.
Well, it's gone. The value trade has been on, and we've had that, whatever the catalyst has been, whether it's been, the Reddit crowd, people, but these growth stocks have just gotten hammered. You can call them the Kathy Wood stocks, and the value's holding up. The value's holding us in there. If the value turns, then you're going to have a total rout in this market. The volatility has been coming down, which is good. It's starting to ramp up a little bit, so I'm gonna stay in the bull camp. But if we start getting too much of this volatility overnight, the average ranges start increasing, then we'll get a little bit more of a correction. But you never know where the top is in the market until afterwards, right? So
we're getting some stacks that are you are correct. You know what? Joel, I went back. As you know, it's sort of like, who was the guy who was looking for the Holy Grail? The guys are always looking for stuff back in history. I'm always looking for the catalyst that in August of 82, why did it happen on, was it a Thursday? Why didn't it happen on the Wednesday or Friday? And I was doing some study on the tulip mania, and that stuff turned, and I was trying to find What caused the day it actually started going down? I just can't find it. I'll go to my grave looking for it, Joel. There's some little catalyst, but you look at some of these stocks. You and I talked about it 2 weeks ago. Caterpillar doesn't deserve to be 40 times earnings. It never has been. Unless we're gonna inflate ourselves so much that it's a nominal number, not a real number. That's possible with what the Fed's done. The Fed is. I won't say screwing up, even though I just did. The Fed is making every sort of normal analysis that guys like you and I do wrong. I mean, Home Depot looks high to me, but hell, if a 2x4 is $7 when it was $2 a year ago, is it really too high on a nominal level? On a real level, yes. But is everything at Home Depot just going to be double a year from now, or more or worse than that? You know, I mean, if that's the case, then the stock price isn't too high. It is in real terms,
exactly.
But it's not on nominal terms. And you know, if I could have this conversation, I can't even talk about it on the air because nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about, right? I mean, we start talking about nominal and real, nobody knows what that even means anymore. That's a 40-year-old story, or should be. It should be put to bed. You know, but yeah.
I would say one thing that could knock the market off this keister a little bit. There's different things, but if they ditch this infrastructure bill. If the Republicans put up a fight, the conservative Democrats don't want to do it, I think that could put a little dent in the market. We are coming into earnings season, right? And earnings season is always determinative. They sold stocks hard off good earnings last quarter. Stocks like Apple and Amazon stuff, they did come back. So, you know, earnings really dominate. So I'd see how the big boys, you know, react to their earnings. If they're sold off on good earnings, then, you know, it's tough. I just, you know, I look at the overnight action a lot, and this is 2 days in a row where we've had some pretty good downside action overnight. And I think that's where your real money players are. Then we just bounce around like a ping pong ball during the day and the bots take over. So right now, you know, two significant down opens in a row. That gives me a little bit of caution, but it's impossible to pick a top in this market. And believe me, I've tried several times.
It's very difficult. And because when you talk about, I just run this one by because we don't have much time. We're running hair late. When you talk about the infrastructure program, I'm going to ask you this. Joel, my friend, does it really matter what time it is? Well, that was a song, right? Does it really matter what the program is? It's whatever the next story is for the Fed to keep printing money and kicking it out there. It could be a COVID program. It could be send people a check money.
Yeah.
Now it's infra. It's all the same thing. It's a bunch of guys printing money and winging it out there. It doesn't matter what the name of it is, does it?
How about a war? Maybe a war will knock us off our keister, but sometimes wars are good for the market, Chief, right?
Well, it depends on the war. Afghanistan wasn't. Iraq wasn't.
Okay, I got a hot.
All right, take care, buddy.
Go blue. We didn't talk too much sports. We'll talk to Derby next week.
Yes, SP Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures. We're going to go right to Kenny, Ian? Why don't we just do that? We'll catch up. Can we do that? I don't think we can.
Is your business being challenged by the...
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. My friend Ian's on the board. Ian, you all of a sudden I lost the Stocks and Jocks, and there you were. Do we have Kenny?
I can hardly hear you. Are you talking into the mic?
I'm talking into the mic. We just had a little glitch in our internet, but it's all back up, I believe. Do you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're faint, but I can hear you now.
I'm faint in many ways, you know, just the way that is. Hey,
what's going on?
Not that I was just looking here how people... By the way, did you happen to spot that article yesterday? And I'm going to ask you, because you know everybody. Do you know a lady named Annie Nova?
No.
She wrote this article yesterday on CNBC. It was published regarding different amounts of student loan forgiveness and what it would mean for the borrowers and for taxpayers and so forth. I'm going to say, Kenny, it was one of the best, most informative articles I've read in ages. Where did she come from?
And where was it? In the journal?
CNBC.
Oh, son, you may have to look it up.
Yeah, at Annie Air Porter. What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Annie Reporter, at Annie Reporter. And
yep.
But had everything. If you cut off people over 65, here's how many people would be involved. Here's how many people, how much it would cost. I haven't read something that informative in years.
I didn't see it. I'll have to go find it.
Okay. Well, I'll try and chip it at you. But hey, what's I was reading. It's amazing how people could put a headline down there. I was looking at Johnson & Johnson's earnings. Johnson & Johnson's down 89 cents, even though they beat on everything, I think. They're talking about $100 million in COVID sales this quarter is the headline. Now,
right.
that is intended.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's intended to make guys like you and I guess, feel like we just took a Viagra or something. But in reality, these guys, you know what their revenue is per year? It's like $82 billion.
Yeah.
I have to believe that this vaccine, with all the grief they're getting, has to be the chairman's got to be sitting, how did we get ourselves involved in this? It's the least profitable item we have. All we're doing is getting crap for it. And by the way, it's not even a pimple on the ass of an elephant.
Right.
Compared to the size of the company. Now, there must be some PR going involved with it, or maybe it'll be ongoing for years and years and years.
Yeah, that just came out. I have to read the story. I just see the headline. I didn't read the story yet.
But I'm just saying, in terms of revenue, in terms of, I have to believe that they're giving these shots out for, well, what are they getting, like $20 a shot? It's probably costing them two or three.
I bet you they're getting more than $20 a shot. I don't know how much they're getting, but I think it's more than $20 a shot.
Well, the original deal that the Trump administration cut with the, seven firms where they were, producing them before they actually were approved, which I think was a terrific idea. They all were in the range of $15-$20 a shot, Kenny. And if you got, like, Moderna got $400 and some million from the government for research, so they got like 12. They got like 12. But the other guys, Pfizer, where the guy can't wait to tell you that they didn't take any money. Well, they got the contract, so they're getting like 20. So if you got money in advance, you're getting less.
Less. Yeah.
For per shot, but they're all under $20, and I'm going to say in the medical world that you and I think we know something about, it's got to be the worst profit item they have. What else is 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 that they sell? Everybody else got to be 100-to-1, right?
Yeah. I think the way this was presented, and certainly the way that it affected not only the country but the world, I think that was the push, right? Keep the cost low and get everybody vaccinated because it was the right thing to do.
Well, you're probably the only guy to remember is when Pfizer first got the deal and the stock went up like 10%, the guy who was the first to sell his shares was the chairman.
Right.
Because he knew we have no business going up 10%. This is like our worst deal.
Right.
It came right back down.
Right.
Anyway, so what's up by you? What are you thinking of this? It was 2 days in a row we're sort of down.
I'm not necessarily surprised. You know, you and I have been talking about it. The market's been priced to perfection. Everything was good. They kept taking stocks higher and higher. All you needed was one kind of news item that the market wasn't expecting that come out of left field to hit you upside the head that would cause people to step back and say, wait a minute, let me just rethink this for a minute. And I think that's what happened over the weekend. For whatever reason, Bitcoin and Ethereum came under pressure, and everyone can speculate on whether it was this headline or that headline. Whatever it was, it caused, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum to, you know, Bitcoin dropped, what, 18% at one point?
Yeah.
Just enough to cause people to, on Monday morning, to say, you know what? let me just ring the cash register a little, take some risk off the table, because maybe we are priced to perfection. Maybe there is nowhere to go but lower from here. So let's do that. And then, in fact, notice they had every other headline yesterday that could have been negative is what everyone focused on. So it focused on, you know, the Tesla story. Now, I'm not suggesting that wasn't a bad story, but there's more to be learned from that, right? How that car crashed. Was it the computer? Was it the system? Was it the drivers or not the drivers? Whatever. But that story, and then Tesla owns X amount of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin now lost, you know, full 15% of its value. And so it just creates a negative loop. Right? And so you saw what happened. All the tech disruptive names came under pressure. Kathy Woods' ARK ETF down another 3% yesterday. Every name in her portfolio, Roku, Spotify, Shopify, all those stocks getting, you know, dinged on the head as a result. And listen, that's okay. Nothing was really panicky. It's not like the bottom's falling out. And I actually think a lot of people not only expect this, but really kind of welcome it. They'd like to actually see the market go lower, myself included. I don't want to see a crash, but, you know, would I like to see another 5 or 7% come out of the market and still be within the normal trading range? Absolutely. Because it'll take some of the fluff out, it'll get people to refocus, and it won't be so, you know, everyone gets a trophy kind of reaction.
Well, when you've got sort of record margins and other types of things, once you start going down, it's pretty hard to have the orderly retreat out of Stalingrad, you know.
Well, no, and I agree, and so maybe it does get a little bit uglier at some point, but, you know, it's the same old story. The market's going up, and nobody wants to be the first one out the door. Nobody
right.
wants to, you know, ring the bell and say, okay, I'm out, and so they do it gradually. But then yesterday, over the weekend when you saw Bitcoin kind of collapse, yesterday morning you saw it in the futures, you saw how there was pressure on the market. Now, I was actually surprised. I thought it was going to be a little bit uglier and sloppier yesterday than it was. But I think, you know, we're in the middle of earnings season, and the other earnings reports continue to impress, continue to beat on, you know, the top and bottom lines and all that stuff. So I think that is helping to support the move lower. But the fact is, I think that, I think it's coming. I think there are still potholes in front of us, which is okay. Cause remember, it's a long game. So the short game might be a little bit rough, but, You just have to look through it, right? Eliminate that noise and focus on the future.
Okay,
I think S&P 4400 is very realistic. I put it in my note the other day. We're in uncharted territory, and so I think that when you try to draw the trend line, S&P 4400 is only up another 5% from where we are. So it's not like it's out of range. That would make the total move so far 16% year to date. Again, that wouldn't necessarily be, you know, out of the norm. But I do think there's going to be a little bit of turbulence ahead.
Well, Kenny, you definitely have your big old paisano thumb stuck on the vein of the world here. What are you of the marketplace? I don't know much about birth and babies like in the movie, or this. How much margin has managed to weasel its way in to these Bitcoin and Ethereum? I mean, I know that you can't just go to a brokerage firm and get margin, but I also know,
right,
in this world we have now, somebody's found a way to do it somewhere.
Coinbase announced when they went public today that they're going to allow cryptocurrency owners to margin their accounts, which I think is absolutely mind-numbing to me to think that the regulators would allow people to margin cryptocurrencies. They're not even regulated yet, and they're going to allow people to margin on it? Coinbase is allowing people to margin on it? I think it's a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, you know, they found a way to margin tulips right before they crashed.
To margin what?
Tulips.
Yeah, right. I hear you. And that's where history repeats itself, right? You think you'd learn from history, and then, you know, people forget, right? Or they weren't around when that happened, so they don't think it's possible. In fact, you and I know differently, and I think it's just, I think it's absolutely nuts that anybody can margin anything crypto, anything. But I suppose there are people out there willing to lend and make a buck based on what
right,
somebody
well,
wants
Kenny,
to do.
We don't have much time. This might be... There might be a long conversation for next week, but if we could do a Cliff Notes version, if you come to PTI or any place, Schwab, Merrill Lynch,
yeah,
and you want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM, and IBM's trading, by the way, IBM's up 383 on their earnings, say it's trading 137, you've got to send PTI a check for for whatever, $67.50, right? You don't have to.
Right.
So, because there's 50% margin. But now, but then PTI, not PTI, but RBC takes that to the bank, and the bank, what's the word, prefer, something vacates the stock, and they lend them the money based on the pledge of the stock. So, but there's a collateral issue all along the way. I mean, the stock's trading twice as much as the, as you're borrowing. So there's safety and there's a method that it's all along the way. How the hell is Coinbase going to go to a bank and get somebody to loan them that money? They don't have the dough to lend you the money on their own.
I have no idea, which I didn't follow the story, but the headline came out the day the place went public that they are going to allow cryptocurrencies to be margined. I'm sitting there scratching my head saying, how is this even possible? And to your point, what bank is going to do that? It's not even a regulated asset yet, and what bank is going to lend money on a cryptocurrency? It's beyond me.
All right, we got
to
dig.
I think what ended up happening yesterday or over the weekend when you saw it collapse in value, I think it did. For anyone that was using it, I think they did, you know, make those sales to try to stop the bleed. Anyone that was margined on it. And there were other people that were just thinking, okay, this is overdone, let me get out now.
Well, real quick question, Kenny. I think I know the answer. Is there any way on earth that you can pledge your Bitcoin? I mean, if I have one, I can't walk into Chase and say, here's my Bitcoin. This is good capital for a car.
I don't think you can. But maybe you can do it at Robinhood. I mean, I have no idea. I don't think you can go into Chase of Bank America and pledge your Bitcoin.
Well, Chase has got their own.
You know, that's an interesting question. We should ask them.
Well, Chase has got their own money. Robinhood doesn't. They got to go to Chase. You know, which is what I don't. All right, Kenny, thank you very much, buddy. Take care of yourself. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down 14, NASDAQ Futures down 30. Be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. My man Ian on the phone. Over there, he's got the headphones on one ear. He's got the other. He looks like he's a mad scientist over there, but doing good. Do we have Jeff? SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 31. I don't hear him, man, Jeff, but I guess he's somewhere. Let's go through some of these earnings. IBM was last night. They actually showed an uptick in revenue for the first time in, like, forever. Stock's trading up 386 at 136.98. Johnson & Johnson beat, but they're down 69 cents at 162. Like I said, we have So Procter & Gamble, those guys had good earnings as well, and were in a late trade. They were down 60 cents. So just because you have good earnings doesn't necessarily mean that you are up all the time these days. But we're waiting here for Jeff. Interesting conversation we had yesterday regarding the we have him? Jeff, we have you?
Hello?
Jeff, you there?
I am.
How are you, buddy? Good to hear from you.
I'm good, Chief. How are you?
We're doing all right. I was just mentioning earlier as we have issues with the we've had issues with the phone lines. I got a call last night on my cell at home from AT&T wanting to change the one line that's worked for 10 years.
There you go.
Just I said, you know,
yeah.
I said we have three.
If it's broke, fix it again.
Right? Yeah. I said, you know, it's the one that works. Why is that the one you're so concerned about, and not the ones that are having trouble with? Gee, that's anyway. So how are you? Tell me what's going on in Jeff World since we didn't have you last week. Anything good?
We are all good. We are just this week our next issue comes out, which will be on Thursday, the latest issue of Luckbox, and it's all about the SPAC world. You know, it's everything everything about SPACs. We spent some time with the number one attorney in the space over the last 2 years, the person who's done more SPAC deals than anyone else. That's Doug Elinoff. And then we speak to a couple institutional investors in the space, and we get really focused on the media and their misreporting on SPACs. You know, they just want to simplify it all the time and say SPACs are bad because fees are higher, celebrities are involved, you know, there's some hot money in the space, so SPACs are bad. Well, you know, that's not how you evaluate investments, and you do it on the basis of the actual underlying investment and not the broader structure or delivery mechanism. So we look more closely at individual SPACs and identify what's good, what's bad, what's not. And then we close on the one thing that just invariably works. There's an arbitrage trade right now that works for any investor, and that is to buy a SPAC when it's listed under $10 before they've identified their target. And if you don't like their target, you have guaranteed treasury-backed ability to kind of take your investment out, your initial investment, and vote it out. So there's an arb trade that exists all the time. We detail specifically how it works. It's not a large trade, and it won't last forever because arb trades never do, but it's where most of the institutional money is being made right now in the space.
Well, it's sort of interesting, and it I won't say it goes against the grain, but it's just the idea here is you're giving people money to essentially pursue an idea, and when they get the idea, you get a chance to bail out, correct? Isn't that the story?
Right. That's right.
It just
and the bailouts, you know, it's guaranteed. It's not going anywhere. You get out with essentially interest. The interest accounts to nothing, but you have a free call option, is essentially, or let's say a free put option, as
well,
the case may be.
What is if
so? You can get out of your trade, and in the interim, there's an arb deal that always exists because you're getting out at 10. So if it's trading below 9 or below 10. You're going to pick that up if you do it before the target's been announced.
Jeff, are they jointly
after the target's been announced, the arb trade is completely gone.
Jeff, are they jointly or separately? I mean, what I mean this is if somebody goes out and raises, say, you and I, Chief Jeff SPAC, whatever, interesting. If somebody wings us $100 million, and we go out and we find what we think is the world's best deal. It's 95. So essentially, it's the whole 100 million. If can 10 people bail? Does it have to be does the 20 or 30% have to bail, and then everybody's out? Or can any individual person say I don't like it? I mean, what if 15 people decide out, and now I don't have enough for my $95 million deal? Is
then that, you can't execute the deal. That's exactly right.
But it's
right.
Not
your target deal is negotiated to be contingent on investor approval, and if you don't have on the aggregate enough investors approve the deal that allow you to consummate the deal, then the deal's off.
But every individual guy, if I'm one guy who doesn't like it, I get my money back.
That's
other,
right. Yeah, other. It's not as a shareholder class. It's at an individual level.
It just sort of seems counterintuitive. I mean, in some ways, when you're used to watching something bizarre like Shark Tank, and you go in front of, you know, four people, or they used to have the seminars every week where you have the, they call them the angel investors, they'd have the dinner and the cocktails, and people would show up, and you and I show up with quote an idea, and we show them the product, and if we get pizza, everybody eats the pizza or whatever. If it's vodka, everybody drinks enough of the vodka, hopefully, to give us money. And the idea, just walk up and say, well, here we are. Well, what do you got? I got nothing left yet. Just give us your dough and we'll think of something. I mean, it just seems sort of weird, I mean, for a Southsider. But I guess there's nothing wrong with it, Jeff.
There's a couple weird things there. The first one is, I'm curious as to how many of those pizza, vodka, angel investment parties you've actually been to.
I know somebody who used to go every week.
But in a broader sense, what you're doing is you're investing in the jockey, not the horse. So the difference would be that instead of pitching a company idea, that you're pitching your management team. You're saying, you know, we have expertise in waste management, and you know, this is the team, and this is what we've done before, and if you give us $100 million, we're going to find a undervalued company that we can drive to profitability. You're right. It's a very different vehicle, but it's a good thing, and it's a good thing because it's bringing more companies, more capital, and creating more job opportunities.
It's a niche, I think, because
today we have less publicly traded companies than we did 10 years ago, and the difference is because of two reasons. One, of course, is consolidation, acquisition, but the second being regulation. The cost of an IPO is just way too hard, and the regulatory burdens are way too high.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why direct listings had a flurry of interest, and now this third form of IPO, which is a SPAC or a special purpose acquisition company, is just another way to bring a private company to market. That's all
it
is.
Depends on what you...
And that means it's going to bring some good companies, and it's going to bring a lot of bad companies. But the vehicle itself is a good thing. It's not, you know, I know the investment media likes to simplify things all the time, and, you know, either you're a divinity or you're a demon, you know. There's never any nuance, but there's a lot of nuance here.
But it's also, it comes down to I'll use the term talent splitting. I mean, what are really your talents? And when you think about investing, I mean, this is what I talk about all the time, Jeff. First of all, I'm not getting anywhere with it because there's no place to go with it. But I mean, money is a factor of investment, just like steel or concrete. I mean, you and I have a terrific idea for a building. Well, we need steel, we need concrete, we need, you know, whatever, electrical wire. But also, we need money to build it, right? So money is just a part of the investment package you need to come out with a completed product. But the Fed has managed to screw that up for 15 years to where even though the guy with steel makes money, the guy with concrete makes money, the guy with the cash doesn't, which is, you know, kind of a which is really a screw-up, I think, that has caused us nothing but trouble. But normally, when you look at people, the job, I mean, the people who sit, I keep using the reference, the people who sit in the sharp, and what I'm saying is the people with the money don't normally have the ideas. So that's why you have intermediaries, you have banks, where people deposit the money, you get some money, and then that guy goes out and finds a borrower that has an idea, and there's a spread there, right? But
yes,
when you look at the Shark Tank, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, if you and I had, you know, $1 billion and we're looking to invest, you and I would feel that's our job, is to find somebody with a product that's good. And if somebody says, well, you two guys, you know, you look pretty old to me, why don't you two knuckleheads go play golf and I'll find the place, just give me the money. What they're saying is, we don't need you two idiots anymore, meaning you and me. We'll find the place. You guys don't know what you're doing.
Your metaphor is right on, because this essentially is taking the capital employment that was traditionally done by private equity or venture capital and making it part of the public domain. So that is exactly right. Those are the companies that are the subject of SPACs, those that would be otherwise funded through private raises, or, you know, through private raises as opposed to public stock offerings.
It's all about people that have ideas, generally don't have the capital, And people who have the capital made it because they make pizzas, they make steel, they manage money, whatever they do. They're not in the business of finding companies that are a good idea to invest in. So somebody drops in the middle, right? Just like any other business, right? I mean, the difference between the guy who needs his car fixed and the guy who knows how to fix the car. That's why there's an advertising. Here's your mechanic, Joe. Right? I mean, correct?
I mean, that's right.
It's all about matching people up in any world, not just today's world. And that's right.
So it's a deep subject with a lot of different variances on it. We probably have about 12, 13 different articles looking at every different aspect of a SPAC, how to buy it, how to trade it, how the fees break down, what that arbitrage trade looks like. And that's, of course, that's free. It's at getluckbox.com is where you sign up for free digital subscriptions, and if you don't want to pay for the print magazine. But the whole issue is going to be available on Thursday. That's when it drops. You can just get it by signing up at getluckbox.com. You know, what we're working on next, in fact, I'd love to get some of your thoughts on it, particularly while our editors are sitting around trying to figure out the best storylines for this. We're going to take a big, hard look at Amazon for the next issue, just because it's timely. You know, New York Times had a front-page story today. Josh Hawley introduced some legislation a couple days ago, you know, the Breakup Big Tech Act. There's an op-ed by Russ Dutart this morning in the New York Times as well on breaking up Amazon. And we're going to take a hard look at Amazon, you know, good, bad, ugly. Obviously there's good. There's low prices and extraordinary customer service. There's a lot of bad that's been documented, and we're trying to come up with an overall assessment. So I'm curious, when you think about Amazon, what do you respond to? What's in the positive column? What's in the negative column? On the consumer side, your relationship with the company is as a consumer, right? So what are the positive attributes that Amazon offers you? And then when you think on a bigger macro basis about the company and its impact on other companies and, you know, it's consolidation of power. You know, what negative things do you see? I'm really curious in your perspective on that.
I'm probably the absolute wrong guy to ask because I've bought like two things on Amazon and they basically sucked on both of them.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I got caught with a computer for Stocks and Jacks when we first started the show. This is 11 years ago, and for some reason the people who the servicing group that I was looking for and wanted some sort of an Apple server, which I didn't even know they made servers, but so I ended up paying up big time for this Apple server. And of course the thing never really worked right. So when I called Amazon, they said, well, it's out of warranty. I go, what do you mean it's out of warranty? Well, it's old. I said, well, I just bought it like last week. How can it be old? Well, you didn't buy it from us, you bought it from one of our vendors.
All right.
What do you mean? It sure said Amazon to me. That's where my credit card went through. That's not us. It's one of our vendors. Sorry. I'm like, so at Apple, I called them and they said, man, this thing's 2 years old. I said, I just bought it. And so I talk about a bad taste. But what I find, and this has been kind of a theme, I don't know if you've got a chance to listen or, is a lot of, sounds like I'm segueing away from the question, but I'm really not. A lot of what we're seeing in some of the politics right now, I think, Jeff, and we've had some people on the last few days, be it student loans, be it wealth tax, be it a lot of ideas that look on the surface of it as being, you know, pretty dumb and pretty un-American, wealth taxes and things like that. Really, in my mind, when you categorize what people are firing at, and when you can get away, what are we, you know, depending on who's saying them, the Elizabeth Warrens, the AOCs, whatever, or even some people on the right are pointing at some people, what you're really looking at, if you just can carve away all the crap from the photo, is that people are pointing their fingers at companies and people that somehow or another have managed to get some sort of a government largesse, either in not paying taxes when other people did, or getting a contract that lasted way longer than it should, or something along those lines. And people, in times of bad times, like we are right now for most people, want their money back. And they want some sort of a give back, saying it's too much. And I really put Amazon absolutely in that category. With the dodge they pulled with taxes, and they're still doing, for years and years, that caused cities to lose money, states to lose money, companies to lose money, where people had to pay 7, 8, 10, 11% sales tax using regular places and not them. But the thing that's it's incredible to me, Jeff, in today's world, once you get that kind of an advantage and once you get that kind of a head start, once you're overseas for 10 years paying 5% tax instead of 35, unless you're an orangutan, you never look back. You never look back. If your company sucks, you get to go buy with other people's money, really, somebody else's company that doesn't suck and take their management and take their people. If you got a sucky guy, I get to go buy Luckbox and I get to buy Jeff Joseph, because now I don't have a sucky guy anymore. I got a good guy. And once you reach that stage, you never look back. And it almost makes you want to, you know, wing water balloons with these people.
You know, it's interesting you say that. A little insight towards how accurate that statement is. I have a close friend who is very inside Amazon at the higher levels of AWS, and which of course is the cloud business, and it's the subject of the House Bipartisan Committee report that came out a couple weeks ago, which I was actually reading yesterday. It's about big tech, not Amazon exclusively. It's about 360 pages, and it's really interesting. I was reading in the Amazon section about how the data that's provided to these vendors, the third-party vendors, is then used, of course. You know, there's great metrics and KPIs, everything from shipping costs to conversion rates and return rates and the cost structure and gross revenue and how effective certain marketing or comparisons are with the product, other products in its category. And they provide all this stuff back to the vendor, which is really helpful for them. However, Amazon has access to the same data, and every time they uncover a product or a business that's doing extremely well because of the margin information, then they go and replicate it and compete directly with their vendor.
Right.
So, and that's well documented. So, the old school conversation about Amazon was break it off into two companies, AWS, the cloud, Amazon Web Services, the cloud service operation, and then the online platform. But that's not where the House committee report went. It said let's break it off into four companies because, you know, AWS being one of them, the cloud-based company, and then break off e-commerce into two divisions. Those products that Amazon makes themselves and sells should be separate from the platform where they engage other vendors to sell their products, because they're essentially competing with them. Quite frankly, I'm forgetting what the fourth product line that they suggest breaking it off to. But I sidetrack. So back to your point, my close friend inside AWS at the highest level of Amazon has told me explicitly that his team and all of his reports have one primary mandate when they hire. You must hire somebody smarter than you. And it's part of an Amazon value that pervades the company, and that your evaluations or your hires are based on fulfilling that objective, that you must hire somebody that's smarter than you. So it goes to what you're saying. When you have a lot of money, spend it to acquire the best and the brightest, and that's actually a part of the management value and doctrine that senior members within Amazon's C-level suite must follow. The higher people, smarter than you.
Well, you
pass it on.
But you're seeing that style sort of everywhere, and I'm surprised. I mean, we have some arguments going on internally with some of the guests regarding Well, a lot of stuff, but that's when you have people from all different walks of life, you're going to get that, but that's okay. But the point, I'm really surprised. I mean, when they, anecdotally, and I'm not asking you to talk out of school if you have friends in the place, if Amazon spots a guy selling, you know, the Warshawski model, if they see a guy selling, you know, fenders for 1973 Jeeps out of you know, out in the woods, North Dakota, then they spot a, you know, a margin there that their eyes light up on. It seems in 2 months later they're in the business of selling fenders for 73 Jeeps. I mean that they basically steal anybody's business that they want, and start competing against the people that they are sort of their vendors. Now, I don't think eBay ever did that. That's probably why eBay is where they are and where Amazon is where they are.
No, I don't think eBay manufactures, you know, eBay doesn't have its own brand. It doesn't have a Kirkland. Amazon does. It's called Amazon Basics.
Yeah, so I'm saying
you want to buy,
I mean, as to why
you want to buy paper towels, you want to buy batteries, you know, AAA or AA batteries, or you want to buy charger cords, anything that has a high volume. It wouldn't be those 1973 fenders, but anything that's a high volume consumer staple or commodity product, they've now got a knockoff brand on, essentially.
So what I'm saying is, I'm really stunned that there hasn't been, I'm not going to say violence, but a massive sort of an up where some attorney hasn't said, I'm going to take 15 of you guys and you know, have a class action or something. But then I think what we've found out, several things, Jeff, I mean, in my lifetime, is that the legal system, and I'm not talking about the criminal stuff that's going on, the legal system absolutely does not work for smaller people on the non-criminal side. Absolutely does not work. I mean, there's no way those people would ever be able to use the system to stop Amazon from stealing their crap. There's no way they could. And they're not in their lifetime where it could help them out at any given time. So it's just...
No, not in their lifetime. Not on an individual basis.
But you see,
there's too many stories of that occurring. And we're starting to speak to some of those manufacturers now as part of preparing for this next issue. And keep in mind that, you know, part of this problem is exacerbated by the fact that as of the first quarter of this year, Amazon became the most represented company in Washington, D.C. by lobbyists.
Yeah.
There are more Amazon lobbyists now than there are for any pharmaceutical company or any defense contractor. So imagine that, you know, for a moment. So Amazon is, and of course they're extremely cozy with the Biden administration.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So they're digging in deeply. We'll see. You know, this is an interesting topic though, because there is bipartisan, you know, it's when you've got AOC and Ted Cruz agreeing on something, or Josh Hawley and Elizabeth Warren on the same page. I think we're going to see something happen this year. One of the key voices on this issue is a woman named Lina Khan, K-H-A-N. In 2017, from Yale, she wrote a white paper called Amazon's Antitrust Paradox. And that really became a basis for a roadmap that would say, okay, it's time for the regulators to wake up again. You know, the regulators ever since the Clayton Act have basically used antitrust legislation specifically for protecting price consumers, where antitrust leads to higher prices, so less competition results in higher prices.
When did they do that?
So Amazon and many, many other companies have been off the hook because they just pointed to say, look, our prices aren't higher. Our prices are lower as a result of our positioning in the marketplace. We should not be a subject of antitrust legislation. So that particular regime thinking about antitrust being utilized only to protect consumers from escalating prices as a result of anti-competitive practices, that is what's on the table now, is revisiting that criteria.
Well, Jeff, why do you suppose we had, it transfers over very easily, well, in one man's opinion. We only got a couple of minutes here. I'll start this up and then we'll do it after the break. We had a big ongoing email fight on the people on the show, imagine that, regarding gun control. And my point is, we don't want any gun control. The we's that are in charge don't want any gun control. So you can pass all the laws you want, and the simple fact is, the people that are in charge of enforcement, whoever they are, will never enforce it, to the point where they'll let, I use the term do-gooders, you know, run some background check thing. They'll fight like hell for 4 years to get it through some legislature. They might as well sit home and eat bonbons, because it's never going to be enforced, Jeff. It just never is, because somebody somewhere is in charge of saying we're not going to enforce that one. I feel the same way with this. If you live in, well, you're close enough, you're in Evanston. If you live in Chicago, you look at the things. What did Robert Kennedy say when at the funeral of Jan? My brother saw things that never were and said why, instead of things that are and
right.
said why.
What could be?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I mean, you look at the taxation on the Amazon stuff, whether people had to pay sales taxes, and you look at the way the law is written, and the onus is on you. And I mention this a lot, and people I know don't like to hear it, but it's not about whether people pay or don't pay or think they can get away with it. It's the difference in, we'll wrap it up here, and then we'll, the difference of enforcement between that and, say, a City of Chicago parking ticket is, you know, we'll talk about that after the break, but it's night and day. Now, it's not a question of whether you and I feel like paying the parking ticket or feel like paying the Amazon tax of something we just bought from South Dakota. But on one hand, they're following Jeff into the men's room. On the other hand, they don't care. Now, the question, after the break, maybe you can opine on that. How does that happen? This incredible lack of enforcement, and yet incredible enforcement based on somebody's whim. Who the hell's the somebody? SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 45. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, my man Ian on the board. S&P futures up seven. I'm sorry, down seven. I'm saying up. We're always up. Now we're not. 2 days in a row, we're down. We need more than 2 days in a row for me to get used to saying we're down. We're down 17 and a quarter. S&P futures down 48. Dow futures down 146. Over Europe, we got some whack over here. DAX down 134. It's 0.9%. FTSE down 79. It's 1.1%. CAC around down 92. 1.5%. Not sure this is because of the Bitcoin collapsing this weekend a little bit, but it's something. I'm not sure what, or it doesn't always have to be a reason, I guess. Nikkei down 584, that's 2%. Shanghai down 4, that's flat. Hang Seng up 29.1. So, again, they're inconsistent, but the Nikkei is definitely down. Bonds, unchanged at 1.60. 10-year rate, 1 minus 0.23. Get Jeff's opinion in a second to see if these guys are going to make it to zero. That would be interesting. Japan, positive 0.09. That's kind of been stuck there. Oil, up 30 cents, 63.68. Brent up 38 cents, 67.43. So that's up probably 10% in the last four or five weeks. Natural gas down 2 cents, 272. RBOB, 205 unchanged. We've got gold up 70 cents, 17.71 hanging in there. Silver up 12 cents, 25.96. Copper up 2 cents, 425. And we got Bitcoin up 109 bucks, 55,971. Again, it was like 63,000 last week and took a little bit of a hit this weekend. Ian, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, with traffic, we again have clear roads other than the accident on I-94 West. We got a Cubs game at 6:40 today, so look out for that if you're driving on the north side. For Chicago weather, quite an odd day in April. Snow around 10, kind of late this morning, but none in the afternoon, with a high of 40 and cloudy. It's kind of miserable. But in Phoenix, it's 93 with no clouds.
We're not in Phoenix.
Yeah, I know. The White Sox lost to the Red Sox last night, 4-11. The Cubs were off, and the Blackhawks lost to the Predators, 2-5. And as you mentioned earlier, Tom, there was a Bulls game. It looks like the Bulls won against the Celtics, 102-96.
That just looks like it. I watched it. They did. Yes.
Was it a fun one?
Yeah, we'll talk about that when you're done. It's interesting. You'll get Jeff's opinion.
All right. Well, Jeff's on.
Jeff, have you watched any of the Bulls? Just as an aside, I happened to watch, just was flipping through the channels on Saturday night, and the Celtics were playing the Warriors on national TV, and it was an unbelievable game. And the Celtics ended up winning. They pulled away late, and it was just really something. Steph Curry was going wild, doing what only he can do, and kind of crazy stuff. And then they play the lowly Bulls last night and basically get their ass kicked. It is interesting, even in professional sports, how, I mean, Saturday night was a serious max effort game, and they come away with a couple guys like with the flu or something, so they show up with a couple people sort of missing last night and play the lowly Bulls and end up losing when they won in this max effort game. Saturday, even in professional sports, you're talking about people. And 2 days later, after a big win like that, then all of a sudden you're down a couple of guys. It's just not the same. You just can't do it. I mean, that's what the long seasons are all about, huh?
Yep. Curry was out with an ankle issue, right?
No, he came right back, but he had a big pat on his butt because he's got a tailbone issue. Then he turned an ankle, not even on somebody's foot. He turned it on his own, which means that it's probably been weak for a while, right? That you don't normally do that if it's not hurt to start with. And still the guy can look at the rim from like across the street and put one in. I've never seen anybody with an eye like that, but he's really something. But anyway, we were talking about...
Well, that was his... he hit 47 points,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
In that game?
Yeah. And he was just winging them in.
That's the one, yeah.
This is
and the only thing I know about that was his 10th consecutive game scoring more than 30 points.
More than 40, wasn't it? More than 30, you're right, more than 30. The only guy that had done that, well, he's not going to catch Wilt. What was Wilt, like 80 games or something?
Yeah.
But we were talking before the break. I actually remember we were talking about before the break. Imagine that. Jeff, we've got like nothing but rules. We were going back and forth on gun control this week. And I basically said, I want to repeat, but nobody wants to pass a law to where they can't get a gun if they really want one, right? Nobody wants to do that, no matter who you are. And if you got an IQ of 12 and you got 5 felonies, then the barrier is an IQ of 11 with 6 felonies, right? I mean, it's, right? I mean, nobody's ever going to write the law where I can't get a gun if I want one. Mm-hmm. I mean, but when you look at this Amazon thing, we're talking about whether you're broke or not broke. I mean, we've had people come in and spend a day from the city of Chicago in PTI Securities, for God's sake, wondering where we bought our computers. Did we buy them out of the city and stiff them on the tax versus in the city, let alone out of state? I mean, and God help you if you get a parking ticket. There's no statute of limitations, is there? I know somebody who was in an Army driver's license when you joined the National Guard. I was never in there, but it was like 15 years later. The guy got his regular driver's license, and the next day they hit him up for a parking ticket. There's no statute. There's nothing. And yet, the same people can buy 48 TVs, you know, Jay Pritzker, from an outfit in North Dakota. I'm not saying he did this, but he's got a house big enough. And nobody gives a rat's behind.
And those are the same people that have expanded the public payroll as well, of course, because they can.
Well, but I'm saying,
I've got a question for you, a quiz question, which I always like doing with you. According to OpenTheBooks.com, and I was just looking at it yesterday, and I noted this: in the state of Illinois, how many public employees would you guess earn over $100,000 in the state of Illinois?
Percentage wise or total?
Total.
I'm going to say virtually every teacher who's made it to age 50 something or is a supervisor, superintendent. I'm going to say it's quite a few, a couple hundred thousand at least.
It is 122,000.
That's close.
And change.
That's close.
122,000 public employees in the state of Illinois earn over $100,000, and that's either in the form of salary or pension benefits. That comes out to about $16 billion for those 122,000.
Well, I'm going to.
And by the way, if you can go to Open the Books, it's either .com or .org, and you can go to that website and enter in your zip code and find out, you know, which public employee in your zip code is earning over $100,000. So it's always an interesting thing to do.
Well, you know, it's what I would like to, to do. And I mean, you could never do this because you can't. Nobody wants a dictator, especially me. But if I was a dictator for an hour, I would just say, "Who's the highest paid person in the state?" Well, you can't do that because it'd be Lovie Smith, right? He is, isn't he? Or was?
Yeah, probably is, right? I never thought of that. That's probably right.
And do you know a guy named? I shouldn't say his name on the air, but I will. Dick Belden.
I'm sorry?
You ever know any of the Belden brothers?
Oh, yes.
Terrific guys. Dick is certifiable, and he would admit that. But I said, you know, Dick, do you realize that? Because we used to talk at the club all the time. Now that the club's not open late, I don't see him. Nicest guys, and so I go, and he's a Mr. Sports fanatic, absolutely, and he's in his 70s. He goes, I said, Dick, you realize that in something like 45 of the states, the highest paid person in the state is either the football coach or the basketball coach. And like the other five, it might be some schlump like the chief of surgery at the University of North Dakota or somebody. He looks at him and he goes, why would anybody want to live in one of those states?
Right.
Where you actually pay your chief of surgery more than your basketball coach, who would be that dumb? Anyway, so it's not like we all agree on this, right? Right, Jeff? But I mean, the one I would look at is I would say, okay, what's the realistically highest price somebody could get paid. And I'm going to say, you know, Jeff Joseph is a superintendent of four different school districts, and the guy makes $125,000 or something. He'd probably make it more than that, but say you're making $125,000 base salary. I'm going to say, all right, 85% of 125 is going to be, let's pick a number out, let's say 105, right, or 110, something like that. I'm going to say anybody who gets a pension more than 105 somehow stole it, connived it, did something, because how could you get more than 85% of the highest salary in the state? I mean, that's unconscionable. I would cut everybody back to
well,
that.
Well, the salaries are a lot higher. Let's start with that.
Well, but I'm saying...
I can see that just looking through open the books.
But whatever it is.
And clicking on your zip code. So 85% is going to take you over $100,000. So there are pensions that are being, you know, paid over $100,000. In fact, I think I told you last week when I was on that Madigan's pension just went from $85,000 a year to $149,000. Talk about something that's got a stick in your throat. The fact that Madigan, after everything he's done to this state, is now making $150,000 a year in his pension.
Well, but he was there, like, forever.
20 years. 20-plus years.
Yeah. But my point is that we know, Jeff, from time to time, and I think they've cut back on some of this, for a long time, your sick leave that you didn't take for 10 years, you got paid your last year. You coached soccer that summer, or some kind of crap, to where your last year's income, I won't say salary, was double you ever made before, and that's what they use the 85% of for your pension. What I'm saying is, as a first cut on these pensions, I would say, what's the highest a teacher can make? Somebody who's, you know, got their, if a regular teacher can make 125, I'm going to look very in askance at anybody whose pension is over 105. Because I'm going to say, how the hell did they get that? I'm talking about just the first cut. You know, if all of a sudden somebody's pension is 160, when the highest paid teacher is 125, even you have to agree with me, as much as you don't like to, saying, well, there's something wrong there, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm saying that would be my first cut. And say, well, how do these guys get all this dough? Was it sick pay? Was it, you know, vacate? What was it? Because I remember when I was a janitor, and then I became a custodian. This is years and years ago, Jeff. I mean, we're talking, you know, when I was in college. So, but then if you were an engineer, and people, well, even as a janitor, you could the idea that you got sick days from a guy from the South Side was like, what do you mean you got sick days? I mean, at Pullman, if you were sick, if you had a heart problem, they'd pay you for 3 months. If you were hungover, they didn't pay you for the day. You weren't sick, you were hungover. You know, so the idea that you would essentially give in to the union, I use that term even though I'm very pro-union, and say you get 10 sick days a year, well, nobody's sick 10 days. You're either sick 20 days because you're sick, or you're not sick at all because you drank too much the night before. I mean, one or the other, right, Jeff? I mean, so the idea that you can, quote, save them. Now, some people, it worked out fine. I mean, my uncle was an engineer, and he ended up having open-heart surgery back in the days when it was like a three-month, and he had never used a sick day in like 25 years. So he actually got paid for the 3 months he was home convalescing from the heart surgery, which now he'd be back at work on a weekend. But I'm saying, if you're an honest person, but the idea that your last year you'd get four extra months pay that now becomes part of your pension, come on. I mean, are we really that dumb? I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, but there's all kinds of these little games and tricks. And the first thing I would do, Jeff, is I don't see how the Constitution says somebody's pension can't be diminished. It shouldn't mean that if you found a trick on line four that you game the system, like the former mayor was put back on the state pension for what, one day? And it got him $40,000 more a year or something?
Yep.
Come on. I mean that was not the intent of that law. You know, the intent of the law was that if somebody's a judge and is about to rule against you, you can't cut the guy's pension. That was the intent of the law, right?
Right.
I mean, it had nothing to do with him sneaking his way back on a county thing for one day and making 10 grand more a year for the rest of his life. I mean, that's not what it was about. It wasn't about saying if you cheated for a day, it gets to work for the rest of your life. I mean, that's the way people think of it now, right? But like I said, Jeff, is the enforcement of this stuff. I mean, right now, nobody wants to enforce the Amazon stuff. So, I mean, they got an amazing head start on people. And now what's their story now with the distribution stuff? Now, I'm going to say, not that they're, you know, they're my favorite firm or anything. I don't own any stock or anything. But you look at a UPS or you look at the Postal Service. But let's say UPS, because it's privately run. Now, these guys, for years and years, have run, it looks to me like a pretty efficient operation. Now, could it be more so? I don't know. Now, the idea that Amazon's going to do the same thing they do and just somehow fight the living crap out of the unions and pay people half as much as UPS, I don't know if they do that or not. Though that's an interesting way to get in the business.
I'll tell you a story we're trying to get to the bottom of, because it's just not clear. You hear anecdotally that, and in fact, Trump was often championing the notion that Amazon has some sort of a sweetheart deal with the post office. It's been really difficult to get our arms around that, to what extent that's true, what that deal might be. We know that there's recently a big party in Washington that the U.S. postal officials and all of the Amazon's lobbyists, it was well attended, and they were all, you know, chummy, hanging out together. But we cannot seem to find the transparency through FOIA or other sources as to what specifically that difference is in terms of Amazon's postal rates at USPS versus what they perhaps could or should be.
They deliver on Sunday for Amazon. They don't deliver for you and me. Now,
right.
Is that standard pay, or are they getting time and a half on Sunday?
Yeah, well, it's not the easiest thing to find out, and
somebody knows.
You know,
somebody knows.
To wonder why,
or maybe Jeff, nobody knows. I don't. Which is worse? Maybe nobody knows. Do you think that the post office is capable of costing out having the Orland post office open on a Sunday for three trucks running around delivering Amazon crap? Do you think they have anybody in there that is a I'll say back when I actually used to know stuff, that there's a young chief you could send over there at age 25 that knows something about cost accounting and say, hey, what are you guys doing? It's costing you $5,000 to open the place. You just charge these idiots one. Right? I mean, do you think they'd have anybody who knows that? Or
probably right. Yeah, it's probably
do they even
hard
know
to know, but we haven't found that information yet, but we're still working on that.
I bet it's not to be found.
Well, what was your thought, speaking of taxes in Illinois, you know, it's interesting, as you said, they'll go out of their way to find ways to spend more money with pension plans, et cetera, but when you have revenue on the table, they're looking to give that back. So, you know, what I'm referring to is Pritzker just recently signed on to a letter to the Biden administration with a bunch of other blue state governors, essentially. It was, Murphy in New Jersey, Lamont in Connecticut, Kate Brown in Oregon, Gavin Newsom in California, Cuomo in New York. There were nine blue state governors that basically wrote a letter to the Biden administration urging the repeal of the Trump-era imposed SALT taxes, you know, the state and local income tax cap reduction,
right.
Basically. So remember part of the last... under Trump's tax law, it eliminated the deductibility of interest income that exceeded $10,000 on state and local taxes exceeding $10,000,
right.
Could no longer be deducted. And of course, you know, that fairly was said to have cost more money to high income earners in blue states, Chicago and L.A. and New York, you know, those cities being, you know, the major cities hurt by it, where there's, higher property taxes, higher state and local taxes. So now all the governors got together. They're urging the repeal of that tax. Of course, that tax is a progressive tax by every standard. So So all that would do, repealing that tax, would be giving money back to high-income earners. I'm talking about the 2017 cap on salt deductions. So eliminating that's a $90 billion a year in revenue. 62% of that comes from the richest 1%, 86% from the richest 5%. And the governors are all trying to get that tax repealed now. So that's so inconsistent with the let's tax the rich meme, when they're lobbying effectively to reduce, which was, by every standard, a very progressive tax.
Well, the issue is that the people that have to pay twice are leaving.
Right, yeah. So then the net result is, everyone, the next country of Florida is about to take shape.
Well, but we're running into, and again, I mentioned this the other day, Jeff, but I haven't mentioned it with you. We only have a few minutes. My tax professor at Notre Dame, Professor Dinkolo, ex-football player, big, huge guy, he used to say that all you can really get out of people, if you look at the total, is 25 to 30%. And if you look at what we get out of people here, it's pushing 30, 31. It reaches the point of sort of morality. How much can you drag out of somebody? And I refuse the idea. You're probably the only person who knows the answer to this question. When the alternative minimum tax was first passed, how many people did it affect?
Oh, I would not know.
Like 155 nationwide. So the idea comes down to, okay, you've got a guy here in Illinois or California or someplace. I had one of my listeners send something in that in some spots in California, if you make, if you win a golf tournament on a New Year's Eve, your tax rate could be pushing with where the federal government's planning on going with this, where they're going back to 39% or where they're going.
Right, 39% is Biden's proposal.
If you're looking at somebody who's got a house in California and sales tax and everything, you could be pushing 63 to 65%.
When you add everything in. In New York, so Biden wants to raise that income tax level to 39%. New York City, and I'm talking about the city, not the state, New York City is 13.5%. De Blasio and Cuomo want to raise that tax to 14.8%. So that's a combined 53.8%. in New York, and that doesn't include sales tax and other taxes. So you have that creep towards 60% for the highest earners.
But their
tax proposal wants to increase that as well. So that's why invariably compare that to Florida, right? And it really explains that mass exodus and it sure is looking much more likely that DeSantis is the next one to beat on the GOP side. I think his ascendancy, especially after the failed hit job on by 60 Minutes, which of course was a travesty. It was a very unfortunate for 60 Minutes, who does such an extraordinary job at times. But boy, that was a hit piece that I'm sure they'd like to get that one back.
Well, you see it every week. You see, what I understand, she wasn't all that popular when she was at CNBC, but Margaret Brennan, I listen to her once in a while, and I have nothing against the lady, but doing what I do every morning, you can tell somebody's attitude. I mean, Jeff, you're a smart guy. It wouldn't take you too long to be on this show with me to know if my goal was to get you to say something stupid and tweet it out.
Right.
I mean, I don't do that. That's not the point. I want to get as much information that other people want and know that's in Jeff's head. It's going to help me and my listeners out. That's my goal. And oh, by the way, we get people around the show who happen to be my friends on top of it. So, but the point being, I want what Jeff knows to help other people. My job is not to screw Jeff, but those guys take their job differently. They want the one liner that gets tweeted out to make them famous. I don't want that. Well, why would I want that? What point would I have in making you or Kevin say something dumb when I like you and Kevin? By the way, you guys are smart enough, I don't want you back tomorrow. Even if I felt that way, why would I do it? But those guys have a different agenda, it appears. guys and ladies. So as to why anybody would be stupid enough to go on 60 Minutes not live, I have no idea. Why would you let them?
Right.
I mean, why would somebody let you take a 45-minute interview and say we're going to use 15 minutes of it? Who would be that dumb?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. Why would you think of anything else that they were going to try and get your message out the way you wanted to give it?
That's exactly right.
I mean, come on. I mean,
well, I think that's why DeSantis did not speak with them, but they showed up at a press conference anyways. I think that was the whole idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... But, I mean, at some point, you have to say, Jeff is a very wealthy man. Jeff just made 300... Well, you're not very wealthy if you make $300,000. Jeff made $300,000 last year. By the way, he lives in this beautiful home in Lincoln Park, and the city just took 50 from him. And oh, by the way, you know, he just bought a car, and they just took 10 from him on the car. Well, at some point, you didn't make 300. You made 200. Right, because you're paying everybody else's taxes. I mean, if you start paying 40% on the 300, when you're only walking in the door with 200, that starts to pile up pretty quick, buddy. I mean, at some point you got to do the math, right?
All right,
Jeff. Thank you very much, buddy. SBF is now
on
15.
We'll see you next week, Chief.
We solved all the problems in the world, and we have it taped.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.